You're listening to The Real Short Box, a comic book podcast made for geeks by geeks.
Welcome to The Real Short Box. My name is Kevin.
I'm Jarrett this time.
Are you?
Yeah.
I kind of wanted to be Jarrett.
Be Donald.
Okay, I'm Donald.
And today we're here for another exciting superhero smackdown. You know how we do things here. We have three matchups, three exciting, powerful, exhilarating matchups.
Mind they just sleep.
Really?
Yeah.
It's who would win in a napping contest.
Oh, yeah.
Napping wake up contest. And then who comes out and says, I had the most restful nap.
In which case, I would win because I actually didn't finish mine because I was napping. Oh.
But don't feel too bad. I was half asleep myself. But we're going to get the job done today because we got three battles here. We got the Battle of the Bounty Hunters, the Battle of the Ninjas, and the Battle of the Sinister Rogues.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's frightening.
That's what I'm going to have tattooed on my my back. Sinister Rogue.
And you know and you know what?
What?
You drive a motorcycle, too.
Yeah?
You'd have to.
And I'd have to be a big Lorenzo Lamas fan.
God, yes!
Absolutely.
That's exactly what I was thinking. You're going to be a renegade.
Renegade. You'll put the Sons of Anarchy to shame. You'll put
Sinister Rogue.
There you go.
I'm the offshoot show.
Can I be like the Indian guy with the feather earring? Please.
But you all have right. to grow. But wait, you have to.
All right, Indian feather earring side.
Wait, wait.
Guy.
If you're gonna do that, you have to grow your hair out really long. You got that cool.
I think
long,
we're having a problem
hair.
Here.
Oh,
I don't know if my hair grows so much anymore.
Look, they have Miracle-Gro for humans.
Do they?
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah.
But okay.
I think that might work for you.
You can just do one of those movie like ponytail add-ons where they just like kind of clip it on.
Yeah.
Maybe just have a ponytail.
I can comb it over.
Yeah. All right. So
we're going to start today. I'm going to go first.
Fine.
Because, you know, I believe mine might be the, not so much the simplest, but, you know, a simple matchup of ninjas. I have Ninjak of Valiant Comics versus formerly originally Marvel Comics, but now IDW Comics, G.I. Joe's great villain, Storm Shadow.
Dun, dun, dun.
Who I used to always call Cobra Ninja.
Cobra Ninja, that works too.
Well, that wasn't that like his, like, didn't they call him that sometimes? They would call him Cobra Ninja?
Like in the cartoon, I think one time they did say, like, the Cobra Ninja or something
right.
like that.
Cobra Ninja Storm Shadow. I remember having that toy and breaking it several times because I played with it so much.
Really?
Yeah, that and Snake Eyes. Those were just the coolest.
So you probably tore them to crap.
Yeah. I had one G.I. Joe, and it was his, I don't even know who he was, but he rode in this vehicle called the Maggot.
The Maggot?
Oh.
And it was like a two-piece vehicle, and one was like the motor engine part where you could put him in and another character, and then it towed behind it like a big cannon gun. That somebody had to sit in to operate?
Sounds like a dreadnought. With the dreadnoughts? Remember
yeah,
the
dreadnoughts.
Like the biker
like
gang?
Yeah, yeah.
Cobra
gang? The Australian like biker gang.
Yeah, no yeah. idea, but the guy that drove it had a helmet on, so I just called him Cobra Commander. Because I was poor, you know? I was like, G.I. Joe.
You'll be my Cobra Commander, that's, maggot driver.
They were expensive. Those toys were expensive.
It's just expensive.
Yeah,
yeah
G.I. Joe was expensive.
He-Man also
G.I. Joe is so expensive, it's expensive like in nowadays. Like the aircraft carrier.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. I was at a convention, I think it was like WonderCon a few years ago. I think you were with me. That thing was huge. It was like,
but it was
10 feet tall, and it cost like $2,000 or something like that.
But it was $100 in like 87.
No, it was more than that.
Really?
87. I think it was like $400 or $500 back then. It was like really expensive even back then.
G.I. Joe,
the USS flag is about the aircraft carrier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even then, it was like a rarely that they've only made like maybe like, I don't know, 100 of them or something like that. But they were very expensive back then.
The figures were like doable,
mm-hmm.
but
the vehicles
were
expensive.
Just like,
yeah, the vehicles were like
the space shuttle was like ridiculous expensive.
$7 or $8 or something.
I had one friend who had like all the vehicles, and he was one of those kids who almost was like how like a collector would be now. Like I'd be like, oh, can I play with it? He'd be like, no. Like he had them all like really cool displayed. We were like seven. I'd be like, can we play with them? He'd be like, no, I just kind of like them. Displayed.
Wow, he was kind of smart back then. He actually was thinking ahead.
No, he was kind of a dick.
Yeah. I agree.
So in other words, bring you over. Hey, check out my toys, but don't touch it.
Look at my super expensive, awesome toys. Yeah, I put them together. We can play with them, but no, we can't play with them.
That's like bring you over to play some Zelda, but like, don't touch the gold cartridge. We can't play the game, guys. We can only admire the cover and the artwork.
So that's bullshit. All right. So tell us about this, guys.
We'll start with Ninjak. Ninjak debuted in Bloodshot Volume 1, Number 6 in July 1993. And his name is Colin King. He's the wealthy son of a master spy who was employed by the British government. He was raised in the Orient, but was an outcast in that society. When his father was killed by a rival agent, King decided to go into training to become a ninja and to bring his killers to justice.
Is he a white dude?
Of course.
Whitewashing. Whitewashing. I don't care if the character was originally American. Whitewashing. Or European.
Come on. Whitewashing. Now. Come on. Have mercy.
All right.
And he became a master of the secret arts, and he served England and the world as Ninjak.
Yes.
Now, Ninjak's greatest asset is he has a very powerful intellect. He's one of the smartest men in the world, at least within the Valiant universe. He understands human psychology, and he's always one step ahead of his opponents. He can anticipate every possible element in any given situation and prepare a counter for it. Ninjak is also adept.
Like on the fly?
On the fly.
Okay.
He's basically playing some serious chess while he's fighting.
No checkers, drink.
Yeah, I like that. Ninjak is also adept at learning and understanding languages, including computer languages. He can learn languages easily and can decipher computer codes and hack into most complex computer systems.
So he's like Ninja Cypher, Cypher from the New Mutants?
In a way.
Whose mutant power could just read languages? He was really smart. He could decipher languages.
Yeah, in a way, but just using that beautiful original human brain.
That's good for him.
That's beautiful.
Good for Ninja.
Yeah, it's great that he had all this money and ability to be able to do great things like that. I guess that's what you get when you have lots of money. You can just do whatever the fuck you want and get away with it. Well, it's just goddamn fine because you have all the fucking money and nobody else does. Sure, that's great. Good for you, Ninjak. Good for fucking you.
Yeah, and you too, Bruce Wayne and Tony Stark, you assholes and Harry.
And Ted Kord.
Ah, fucking green goddamn hornet could suck a dick, too.
Do I detect jealousy, sir?
No.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
Shut up.
I mean, look, they worked hard for what they got. They worked hard for their money.
No. After the fact.
After the fact. Anyway, Ninjak has trained his body.
Angry at fictional heirs.
Ninjak has trained his body to the level of an Olympic decathlete. Decathlete, which means 10.
That guy can do 10 sports. Wow.
He has mastered a variety of martial arts, including karate, Jeet Kune Do, which is the Bruce Lee specific art, which I love.
Way of the fist, right?
Yes, right. Judo, Aikido, and several forms of Kung Fu. However, his fighting style of choice...
Does he know Panda?
I'm sure he does. Or he can learn it very quickly.
Kung Fu Panda. And if you're in a hurry, you can do Kung Fu Panda Express.
Oh! Donald will be at Giggles and Laugh Factory.
You making a funny?
Yeah. I made another funny. At Splinter from Ninja Turtles.
Of course. But his fighting style of choice is the lethal art of ninjutsu, which was used by ninja warriors of feudal Japan as assassins, as which many people know. Ninjak is also an expert marksman and trained in the use of world cutting edge weaponry. He is a master of the bow staff, the scythe, the sword, bladed projectiles, and of course, the famous ninja stars known as shurikens.
Shuriken.
So basically, he's a master of all the Ninja Turtle weapons.
That's what it says right there in his biography. Master of Ninja Turtle
weapons. So he's like Donatello that learned how to use all the other weapons.
Mm-hmm.
But even smarter, with like almost like a computerized type brain.
So he's like Donatello.
Yes.
But with all the other Ninja Turtle weapons experience.
Yes, but even better.
No, I don't believe that there is that.
Well, on the next SmackDown, Ninjak versus Donatello.
I think that's going to have to happen, sir.
Well, I feel very sorry for our green turtle.
With a hard shell, with a hard shell to protect friend. Himself? Yeah, sure. I feel sorry for him.
Ninjak will cut that shell off. Much as I love Donatello.
Ninjak's dead.
Turtle and a half shell.
He's going to have him on pizza afterwards.
Well, anyway, now let's do Storm Shadow. Storm Shadow's real name, if I pronounce it correctly, it's a beautiful Japanese name.
Did you say a Jappy name?
Time out.
Yeah, we will leave that in.
No, we're not.
Yes, we are.
No, we're not.
We totally leaving that in.
No.
No, 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 no.
Now he's like, Jesus.
That's not right. That's not right.
So this zipper neck, what's he got?
Somebody had some World War II issues.
I wasn't even born yet.
Your dad fought. He brought that hatred over to you.
He wasn't born yet either. All right, anyway. This young Japanese man, if I pronounce his name right, it's Tomisaburo Tomisaburo Arashikage.
Fair enough.
Arashikage.
Sounds like a ramen dish.
Agree to disagree.
Yes. His first appearance was in G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero, number 21.
Yes. Infamous issue, by the way. There was actual no verbiage, if I recall.
That's the sound issue, if I recall, right?
Yeah.
The Seika's one, yeah.
Yeah.
I have it. I got it, too.
Do you?
Like a near mint condition.
Oh, bring it over. I'd like to see it. And sure. Then just not give it back.
Of course.
Cool. That's the one with the Snake Eyes origin, too, right?
I believe so. Yeah. I believe so.
Yeah, that was actually a cool story, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Who wrote that?
It was, Larry Hama.
Right.
Who I believe also wrote for the cartoon as well.
Yes, he did.
And he wrote like a ton of issues, like, right? It was like he wrote like the bulk of that series.
Yes, he wrote the bulk of that series.
And you know, normally I would like to think when you go to conventions, you get people to sign stuff, that they're really excited to do it because it's something they worked on and they were passionate about it.
Oh, no.
But I went to get a figure signed or autographed. A Cobra Commander. It was the 25th anniversary action figure I bought.
By Mr. Hama?
By Mr. Hama. And he wasn't...
Too friendly to you?
He wasn't receptive, I'll say.
He was Salty Larry?
Yeah, Salty Larry.
Maybe he's having a bad day.
I think maybe it was lunch, and he just wanted to leave. And I was like one person too many, you know? I don't know.
Wow.
You know, that does happen sometimes.
Yeah, you never know where you catch
people at the wrong time. You know, look, when you're hungry, you're just not in a good mood.
Oh, right? I know. I was a cook for 11 years. Trust me, I know.
Oh, I'm infamously a dick if I'm hungry. Like,
you're hangry.
Oh, yeah, man, I'm a dick. Wow. Where I have to, like, apologize immediately. I'll have, like, a bite and be like, you know, I'm so sorry. Like, 5 seconds later, earlier, I was like, yo, fuck, where the fuck is my cheeseburger? But go on about Mr. Hydra. Oh, my God.
Yes, his skills and abilities. Yes, it's Mr. Arashikage.
I wonder how many times it actually said that in the book. Like, said his real name.
Right. Storm Shadow is considered one of the most dangerous and skilled fighters in the world. He can move faster than a human eye can follow, scale sheer walls with his bare hands and feet, endure unbearable pain and hardship. He has demonstrated the ability to dodge bullets as well as deflect them with his sword. His sword brother, Snake Eyes, is one of the few people in the entire world who can come up against him and survive the occasion. Which, of course, you mentioned Snake Eyes earlier. Storm Shadow is a grandmaster of the Arashikage Ninja Clan, an eighth degree...
Grandmaster of a clan, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Can't go wrong there.
Huh.
Whoa.
An eighth degree black belt in 5 martial arts systems. He has demonstrated knowledge of pressure points and nerve strikes, as well as the Dimmak techniques. He can trace his lineage back 30 generations of elite assassins. He's a master swordsman, an expert in all melee weapons, all small arms, an exceptionally skilled marksman with both the bow and arrow and using various throwing weapons, like shurikens. He has underwent extensive military training in addition to his martial arts background and is proficient in sabotage, demolitions, intelligence, and covert operations. So this man can get it on.
You know who else is very proficient in sabotage? The Beastie Boys, actually.
Yes, the Beastie Boys are very proficient in sabotage.
Oh, sorry to interrupt, everyone. Just wanted to mention real quick about a shop in Canoga Park, California called Spiro's Heroes. Elliot, the proprietor of the store, has over 300,000 books in what's called the Temple of Comics. That's Spiro Heroes in Canoga Park. SpirosHeroes.com.
Now let the smackdown begin.
Who you got? I'm actually curious on this one.
I know where he's going. I can guarantee you.
Yeah.
He's got a hard-on for Valiant Comics.
Really?
Yeah, big time. But he also has a partial hard-on for G.I. Joe, but he is a hard-on for Valiant Comics.
You know what? You're right on both ends. And that's why, to be honest with you, I had this going back and forth. These guys are just going to be throwing shurikens at each other,
are going to be dodging moves. They're going to be swinging those swords left and right, almost like a beautiful lightsaber battle. Mm-hmm. These guys are just so brilliant that I'm to a point where I saw this as a draw initially. But I think just by a slight hair that Ninjak could just time it just right with his ability to foresee the attacks ahead of time. Mm-hmm. That somehow a mistake will be made by Storm Shadow, that Ninjak will just get the slip on him and be able to put one of his swords right in his gut. But it'll come at a price, though, because Storm Shadow will also probably throw a shuriken at him and, you know, probably slice his neck or something like that. But I think in the end of the day, Ninjak will walk away injured, bloodied, but will win the battle. And then to really show proper way to finish a man off, he will behead Storm Shadow.
Well, that's sweet of him.
Yeah. Yes. Send it in a box to Snake Eyes, right?
And then Snake Eyes.
No, actually better. Probably Cobra Commander. Like, hey, look what I did.
No, send it to Snake Eyes because then you have the sequel.
So Snake Eyes takes it personal and then he goes after Ninja.
Of course he has to.
Well, that makes sense. But also,
it's the code.
Also, what's her name? What's one from G.I. Joe the movie? The red? Scarlet. Jinx.
The ninja Jinx.
Because they're part of that same clan. So you know what? Maybe they go and try to hunt Ninjak together. That's another story. But yes, that's just my opinion. I believe Ninjak is just a little bit better, and he will defeat Storm Shadow.
By the way, did that Ninjak series come out yet? I'm way far behind. I'm sorry. There's supposed to be a web series?
Yes.
I just know the guy who played Deadshot on Arrow,
right,
got cast as him. That's all I know. I don't know what.
Yeah, and I think Bat and the Sun was producing it.
Oh yeah,
yeah, which is interesting because they're the ones that always did those versus things, kind of like we do.
Oh yeah,
but they do it in in video form. There's a lot of production value that goes into it. So I'm glad that they took that deal and that they're doing something a little bigger, which is nice.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I just heard the casting and then Ninjak, and then I had to remember who Ninjak was. But now I've heard a lot about Ninjak, and...
Yeah, and also this is a chess versus checkers. Now, not to say that Storm Shadow is a bright guy. He's no dummy either, but Ninjak's a little brainier, shall we say.
The only thing I would say is that Storm Shadow has it in his blood, being a man, a Japanese man, not a Jappy man, a Japanese man, and... I'm still going to have to give it to Ninjak, though. Because all the intelligence stuff you said, and being able to anticipate
every possible move.
To me, it's like it's Super Ninja versus regular Ninja.
And he can learn on the fly.
Yeah.
So quickly.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm just, Ninjak is just Super Ninja.
Yeah. And like I said, I love both these ninja, because, I'm a big fan of ninjas, ninja movies.
Well, I mean, but you got to give it to Ninjak, because his name is Ninja.
Yeah.
It's in there. Ninja, ninja, well, with a K on the end.
And he's a jacked ninja.
But,
right.
But the name Storm Shadow, you can argue, is ninja-like.
No, it's not. Every letter of ninja is not in the name Storm Shadow.
Yes, that's true, but I'm just saying.
Fail.
You can imply that someone named Storm Shadow operates in the shadows and could be a ninja.
Not even listening anymore. Total failure.
You are rude, sir. Ninjak, you are rude.
Ninjak wins, hands down. Hands down, because he's probably going to chop off his hands too. Send them to
ceremonial
their mother.
I like the head in the box thing, because then I can see it like coming to Snake Eyes.
He opens it. Kind of like Seven.
I was just going to say, and he's like, "What's in the box?" But he can't talk. And then Morgan Freeman walks out, and he's like, "If you kill him, he wins, John." And then Snake Eyes is like, "Why is Morgan
actually
Freeman here?"
You have Roblox say it.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
Which was played by The Rock, I think, in the movies.
Yes.
Funny thing about The Rock.
What about him?
Oh, you want to know?
What about Dwayne
Kevin
Johnson?
And I have a thing going on here to where...
There's some promises to The Rock that are made.
Yes.
And, Kevin needs to fulfill them.
Yes, he does.
But we'll get into that another time. So we're all three saying Ninjak, I think.
We're all agreed on Ninjak.
So all three of us Ninjak, yes. 100%.
100%.
Yes.
Okay.
Let us now move on to the Battle of the Bounty Hunters.
All right. Well, this one was a fun one for me, a quick little fun one I did. In my battle, I have the original Ghost Rider, the Western Cowboy Ghost Rider.
Guy all in white, had the white hood, the whole everything white, right?
Yeah.
Cape.
He's versus Jonah Hex.
Nice. Uh-oh.
Now, we're going to get in a little bit of history for the Ghost Rider, because not a lot of people probably know the Ghost Rider.
No.
Most people probably know Jonah Hex. He had that terrible movie a few years back.
With a good actor, but just got bad material.
Right. And then he had an excellent cartoon short for DC Animation here not too long ago. I think the voice of him was played by Thomas Jane.
I love Thomas Jane, yeah.
Second Punisher?
Yeah. So let's get into the Ghost Rider here. He's Marvel's first Ghost Rider before the Flaming Skull dude. Little did anybody know, and I did not even know when I looked into this, the character was based on a Magazine Enterprises character who was called Ghost Rider.
Really?
Played by, in the comic, the character Rex Fury was his name, his real name, and he was the Ghost Rider. This was created by writer Ray Crank and artist Dick Ayers. And this was in 1949, by the way.
Oh, wow.
So this name's been around for a long time. The character appeared in horror-themed Western stories through the run of Tim Holt, Red Mask, and A1 Comics, up until the institution of the Comics Code.
Okay.
So if it wasn't for the Comics Code stepping in, we would not probably have had the Flaming Skull Ghost Rider that we know now and love.
Right. That's true, because in the 70s is when they started loosening things up with the code.
Yep. And in the Comics Code Authority, that's a big thing. In fact, I really
think... We'll do a podcast on that.
We're going to be digging into that at some point.
We're going to talk about Mr. Dr. Wortham.
Yeah, there's some juicy stuff that happened in that, and I love it. Like, oh my God. I'm a big EC fan. Kevin's a big EC fan. Like,
House of
Un-American Activities. Oh, we're going to have a little big...
I'm a huge communist. Let's get to the Ghost Rider.
Okay, so after the trademark to the character's name and motif lapsed, Marvel Comics debuted its own near-identical, horror-free version of the character in Ghost Rider number 1 in 1967. So they basically stole the character.
Right.
And said, he's Marvel now, he's a Western, and that's so they could get the name.
Right. They're like, we created him. Like, did you? Like, did you?
Yeah. They just basically bullied their way in there. With the introduction of Marvel's Supernatural Ghost Rider that came in the 70s, Marvel renamed this Ghost Rider, the Western one, first, this is great, to the unfortunate name of Knight Rider, which is a term that was previously used in the southern United States to refer to members of the Ku Klux Klan.
Oh, and just so you guys know, this guy is all in white, like in a whole like white.
It's got a white.
Hooded white.
Yeah. Yes.
So, and unfortunately,
not a Klan hood, but he's got like a white mask on.
Yeah. It does unfortunately imply things.
And then they renamed him to the Phantom Rider.
The Phantom. That's how I knew him. The Phantom Rider.
And that's what stuck.
Right.
At least 5 men have been the Phantom Rider, one of whom is active in modern day.
Okay.
So it's almost like they stole the idea of the Phantom to create the Phantom. Marvel just stole a lot back then. They just stole and stole and stole. We have a guy that's a member of our group of our Super Palookas, our comic book group on Facebook, that would love that I just said that, actually.
Right.
Marvel just steals. the character origin, his name is Carter Slade. So when Marvel took this character, they said, okay, his name is not Rex Fury, it's Carter Slade.
Like one man's man name to another man's man's
name. Carter Slade. He was the first man to wear the mask. He debuted in Ghost Rider number 1. He battled evil while dressed in a phosphorescent white costume. So basically, it pretty much glowed.
Right.
He had a complete full face mask, cape, and a white hat that went along with it. He received his outfit and his white horse from Flaming Star, who's not a gay Indian. He's actually a Native American medicine man. So from Flaming Star, he received his outfit. And his powers, there's not much here. He's a regular guy. He's an excellent horseman. He's a great sharpshooter. And his costume provides phosphorescent glowing effect.
So basically he just rides up and goes,
actually, that's good for intimidation.
That's exactly what it's for.
Oh, I'd be freaked out.
Yeah. He banks on the intimidation.
Which is what the Klan did, right?
Yeah, I was about to say that. It's kind of like if you're in the wrong community, you're really going to freak people out.
Wow.
Yeah, we can see why some of this stuff didn't go so well later on, you know, but...
And that unfortunate name when they called him Clan Man for a while. That didn't go well.
That doesn't go well at all.
Mm-mm.
Very, very harsh.
Nope. So now we're going to get on to Jonah Hex. Jonah Hex has a little bit of history here, so I'm going to go into it pretty quick. He was raised by his alcoholic father, Woodson Hex. He was a regular victim, of course, of slaps and taps. He was, physical abuse, punches, kicks, whatever his dad felt like taking out on him for the day. His father eventually stopped supporting him because he was a burden, and he sold him into slavery with an Apache tribe. He was only 13 when he did it, when he was sold into slavery.
It's a pretty messed up origin.
Yeah. It gets worse. They worked him constantly until one day when he saved their children from a puma. He was welcomed as a full-fledged member of the tribe. So that's good. He finally, he worked his way into there. The chief took Jonah in as his own son, but his adopted brother, Noah Tante, grew jealous. Noah Tante and Jonah, they both had a thing for a young girl named White Fawn.
So always a woman.
Right? Always White a Fawn. Woman. Always a woman. So Noah Tante betrayed his brother during their manhood rite at the age of 16 and left Jonah for dead with their enemies, the Kiowa, or Kiowa, however you want to pronounce it. I'm not quite sure. He was rescued by a cavalry patrol, although they shot him in the gut.
It's a weird rescue mission.
When he tried to stop their slaughter. Left for dead a second time, he was nursed back to health by an old trapper in the woods.
Jesus.
So Jonah doesn't have the greatest history, and it, like I said, it gets worse.
Difficult childhood.
Some shit luck.
Right. Eventually, he returned back to his village, and he found that Noah Tante had married White Fawn.
Oh.
Yeah, that sucks. He declared Noah Tante's betrayal to the chieftain, but the accusations were denied, and it was decided that they would deliberate through trial by combat.
Jesus.
Those always go well. Noah Tante sabotaged Jonah's tomahawk, forcing him to cheat and end the fight with his knife. For breaking the rules of combat and killing his son, the chieftain declared that Jonah would be branded with the mark of a demon and exiled under penalty of death.
God damn it.
This is where he received his infamous scarred face.
The old melty mouth.
Yep. Years later, when he returned again to rescue a kidnapped white woman, he was captured and White Fawn was shot dead by the chieftain for trying to help him escape.
It's not a trauma.
And then Jonah killed his adopted father, the guy that then killed White Fawn. So
I'd say that's fair.
Right. Yeah, it seems like it. Jonah Hex, later, he was inspired to become a bounty hunter after murdering his first criminal, the outlaw Lucas Mad Dog McGill. He gunned down Mad Dog while the man was beating his wife outside of a saloon. In his inebriated stupor, Hex believed him to be his own father.
Whoa, daddy issues.
He's, right. He saw this guy beating on his wife, and he was like, "Daddy, no," and shot him down in the street. The local deputy insisted that even drunk, it was the fastest draw the local deputy had ever seen and gave him the massive bounty on McGill's head.
Wow. Nice.
Hex accepted, and the rest is history. So as far as power is concerned, like, again, not much. He's a regular guy. He's an outstanding marksman with an ability to have quick draw, which is an amazing ability to just pull your gun very fast and shoot before the other person.
Right.
He's in peak physical condition and an expert in hand-to-hand combat. He's a master tracker and detective. And he honed what they call a danger sense from years of training and experience. So he can basically know when, like, shit's gonna hit the fan.
So it's like his version of a spidey sense.
Exactly. Yeah. So without further ado, I'm gonna let this smackdown begin. What we have going on here is the scenario of Jonah Hex, while drinking in a bar, overhears others talking of the legend of the Ghost Rider and the bounty on the Ghost Rider's head.
Mm.
Because good and bad guys put bounties on people's heads.
Right. Mm. That's true.
Hex, never to turn down a bounty, inquires upon the gentlemen who are resistant. They don't want to oblige him. So after a long conversation with Jonas Fiss, they happily give him the information. Hex rides out to the canyon, where he was told the last known whereabouts of the Ghost Rider. And he's going to bring him to justice for killing Judge Mackerel. Upon his arrival into the canyon, at night, Hex sees this glow off in the distance. He's not quite sure what he's encountering. He ducks down on his horse. He barely dodges a few bullets. Hex counters with a couple more shots and misses the rider. The rider takes off further into the canyon, but Hex now knows that whatever this is, it's glowing. So he follows that glow into the canyon.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got Ghost Rider pinned against a mountain in a ravine. The Ghost Rider hunkers down, preparing for battle. Hex closes in using his tracking skills and keen sense. He attacks, only to find an empty glowing suit.
Ah, very smart.
Exactly. The Ghost Rider, now all in black, attacks from the side, cutting Hex across the side. Would have been a bigger cut and worse damage, but Hex's danger sense kicked in. He knew something was off, and he moved. Not one to be afraid of pain, Hex reaches out his hand, and it's stabbed into the palm, and he closes his hand on the blade and uses it against the Ghost Rider to strike him in the head with the butt of the blade. Knocks the Ghost Rider down. He's dazed and confused. Hex ties him up and begins a long journey back for his bounty. Now, along the way, the Ghost Rider wakes back up. He tells Hex of the heinous crimes that the judge has actually done. Rape, murder, blackmail. Hex doesn't bat an eyelash. He doesn't care. But when he gets into town, he stashes the Ghost Rider in a nearby barn and goes to investigate, because Hex is not a man to let someone stand by and murder and rape.
Yeah, he's a just man. Yeah.
Right. That's not something he's into. So finding this information to be true, Hex confronts some of the judge's corroborators and is overwhelmed by some goons. If not for a few well-placed shots from out of the blue, Hex would have been a goner. But Hex finally overcomes the goons and swiftly brings everyone to justice, basically. He knocks them all out and wins the day. Jonah goes back to the barn, finding just rope and a note saying, "No need to thank me. The Ghost Rider only seeks justice." So Hex tosses the note, laughs, then walks back to the bar for another drink. So the way I see it, Jonah wins the battle, but together, they might just win this war.
So basically, Jonah Hex, he's basically the wrath of the West.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, if you do something wrong,
he's gonna come
and
find
Jonah
you.
Catches wind. And it's the same thing with the Ghost Rider, really. I mean, these guys are so similar in a lot of things.
Right.
It's just Jonah's more fleshed out because he's had more time. He's more popular.
Right.
The Ghost Rider / Phantom Rider, not so much anymore. The Marvel is not much on keeping the Westerns alive. DC got lucky when they had Palmati and Gray.
Right.
Start writing some Jonah Hex books, because
those were great.
They were really fun. Yeah. Those guys had a passion for it. They were having fun.
Yeah, it was just old Western cowboy books.
Like, and you could just see it just sizzle off the page. You know, there's like little shorts in between in the book. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it was a 2 or 3-parter. Most of the time it's just a 1-shot. Almost always about revenge, money, sex, something of those lines.
I picked that book up on a whim, and then just it became part of my regular like books just instantly.
Yeah, when DC did the New 52, the All-Star Western was one of my favorite pulls.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, because they pulled, they had Arkham, like the original Arkham. What's his name? I don't remember his name from the...
Arkham?
From the book.
Not Jonah. It might be Jonah Arkham, actually.
No, I don't think it was, but...
Oh, the original, Arkham.
Original,
okay, yeah.
Yeah, and...
Jebediah, maybe? Something
maybe.
Like that.
But they basically, it was like a team-up book then.
Right.
And he was in Gotham for like... part of that series.
Right.
It was really good.
Yeah.
And I highly recommend it, guys. So if you get a chance, check out the All-Star Western 52 run of Jonah Hex. Also, the original run in DC before that of Jonah Hex, both written by Palmati and Gray. And
it's a treat.
It's great.
There's a if I correct, oh no, we're not. It, I, you said a couple of different people took on the mantle of the Phantom Rider, that original Ghost Rider.
Five people.
Yeah.
One of them, there's a West Coast Avengers story that I remember reading about where one of them was actually more nefarious. He, like, I think it was the Avengers went back in time to, like, the West.
Mm-hmm.
And he drugged or hypnotized somehow Mockingbird into thinking they were, like, lovers. And he had sex with her. And then she found out, like, she came to her senses.
So pretty much he was like a rape. He raped her. Yeah, he date raped her.
Shit.
Yeah, and I think she killed him.
Mm. Oh my god.
Yeah, and then I think she got kicked out of the Avengers for it or something like that. It was like it was a really like dark story for like kind of like a happy go lucky West Coast Avengers book or something.
That's
like that.
Crazy.
Yeah. So.
Yay!
Yay! Good times.
Well, Jared, I think you're our final fight for the night. What do you got here going?
I have the Sinister Rogues, as you will be calling me from now on. Sinister Rogue Galante.
All right.
I have the original Sinister Six versus the Flash Rogues gallery there. Now, I obviously, the Flash Rogues throughout time have amassed quite a cadre of members, so I'm kind of going with the originals, and same with the Sinister Six, I'm going with the original Sinister Six. The original Sinister Six consisted of their de facto leader, Dr. Octopus, Otto Octavius. He, I'm just going to go into their powers real quick. He is a brilliant engineer and inventor, superb strategist, charismatic leader, genius level intellect, wears super strong and durable mechanical appendages. In fact, I've heard sometimes they were adamantium or on the level of that.
Yeah.
And he has telepathic control over his mechanical arms. Next up, you have...
By the way, if someone out there has not seen Spider-Man 2, the Sam Raimi
run. The original, yes.
Yeah, the Sam Raimi run.
2004.
Right.
Right, the Sam Raimi run. If they have not seen that Spider-Man 2, highly recommend it. Just for the scene where Doc Ock, I believe, is going under for surgery.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And his tentacles comes to life.
It's beautiful.
And they basically have a mind of their own. And they start, like, attacking the surgeons that are in the room.
That's awesome.
It is a thing of beauty.
Well-executed scene.
Very well-executed.
The great Alfred.
And also, one of the best sympathetic and well-executed villains I've seen in a superhero
movie.
That's
a dark horse for a lot of people. That's, like, one of their, like, favorite, some people's favorite superhero movies. Or favorite of any of the Spider-Man movies.
Because you felt bad for him, the way Alfred Molina portrayed him.
Yeah, so far, you know, it's definitely the best of all the Spider-Man films that have come out. Those last two... Turds.
Yeah.
Just turds.
Just probably like a fan. Next up you have Adrian Toomes, the Vulture.
Yes, who we will be seeing soon this summer.
Oh, yeah, that's right, as via Michael Keaton. Genius electrical engineer, electromagnetic tailored body harness grants enhanced physical attributes in flight. So he's an old-looking dude, but he's deceiving because he's actually super strong, and his suit allows him to fly and whatnot. Next up, you have Max Dillon.
Yes.
Electro. He is, he has flight, which I totally forgot about, and I don't think they use that much. Obviously, electric manipulation, superhuman strength and speed when fully charged. Also, I just want to note, with the Flash Rogues and the Sinister Six, I'm going with their original incantations. I'm not doing New 52, where they're, like, empowered, or, like, Electro later on became, like, electricity.
Right.
This is the guy in the suit. Science stuff here, people.
Science!
next up we have Kraven the Hunter.
Nice.
Sergei Kravenov. A really underrated character. Really love this guy. Olympic level athlete, gifted tactician, hunter, and hand-to-hand combatant. Superhuman strength, speed, agility, stamina, durability, senses, and reflexes, and longevity. He also had a lot of kind of gadgets and booby traps and tricks he would use, obviously, for hunting, and that were part of his outfit. Next up, we have Mysterio, Quentin Beck. Mr. Beck, as we all know, is a master illusionist. He's got a special effects and illusion expert, master hypnotist and magician, amateur chemist and roboticist, and this is what I thought was interesting, exceptional hand-to-hand combatant. Wow. And use of weapons. You don't really see him fight that much, but he definitely...
You know what's funny? At one point, we thought Bruce Campbell was going to play Mysterio back in the old Sam Raimi movies.
I was going to bring that up.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That would have been interesting. Not the guy I would have picked, but interesting. Lastly, for the Sinister Six, number six, The Sandman.
Yes.
One of my favorites. William Baker, Flint Marco, all kinds of names for this guy. Superhuman strength, durability and endurance, flight in sandstorm form, size and mass manipulation, density control, shape-shifting, completely organic sand within body, and earth manipulation.
Hmm.
So that is the Sinister Six. Now we have the Flash Rogues. And for this team, I chose Mirror Master, Captain Cold, Weather Wizard, Captain Boomerang, the Trickster, and Heatwave.
Nice.
These are pretty much some of the originals. Captain Cold, Mr. Leonard Snart, one of the coolest villains out there.
I love that name.
Yeah, oh, great.
Yeah, Leonard Snart.
Especially if you're doing the new version. What do you have to do?
I hate that. I'm sorry.
It's terrible. No, okay. I know people are like...
I'm glad you don't like
No, I know people are like, that's my Captain Cold. That is not my Captain Cold.
No,
he should be way more seedy and way more like, not that.
So we need a shirt.
So what you're saying is, not my daddy's Captain Cold or not my Captain not my Cold?
No, we just need a shirt that says, not my Captain Cold.
And has it.
I think we need a group shirt.
You know what?
This is our first group shirt.
Next comic book convention, wear that.
So he too is pretty much the de facto leader of this Rogues team. And he is also a master tactician and strategist. Extensive knowledge of cryonics. Possesses one of the coolest weapons in any superhero weapon-dom. The cold gun that allows him to freeze objects to absolute zero temperature. In fact, Mr. Freeze himself has said Leonard Snart is the only other person he knows that has mastered absolute zero. So he gets praise from Mr. Freeze.
From Dr. Freeze.
Exactly.
Wow.
Next up, we have Mirror Master.
I love him.
Mirror Master's great. I'm going with the Sam Scudder version, the very first one. Not the Coke Addict Irish one, who I like as well. And if you love the Flash Rogues, definitely just read Geoff Johns' run. Because he breathed so much life into them. And like even has issues just dedicated to like their kind of revamped origins. And they're great.
Yeah, fun read.
Mirror Master has various powers over mirrors, including the ability to travel through them and trap others within them. So he's got that whole mirror world that he can go through and send people to. Then we have Mr. McRory, Heatwave. Heatwave possesses a handgun-sized flamethrower, much like the cold gun. He's kind of the opposite, and he has knowledge of pyrotechnics and combustibles. He wears an asbestos suit that protects him from fire and heat, but will probably kill him.
Gives him ball cancer.
Yeah. And he has a pipe attached to his left arm that allows him to put out fires. Good for him. Good for you, Heatwave.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have the Weather Wizard, Mr. Mark Martin. Geoff Johns did great with him as well. Weather manipulation via weather wand. He has a weather wand, which pretty much allows him to control the weather. It's pretty dope and pretty powerful. Then we have the Trickster. The Trickster is James Jesse, or
Mark Hamill, if you're going by the original
Flash series. And the new Flash series, actually, he's in it.
Yeah, I like that they did that.
Yeah, awesome, yeah. He's a skilled acrobat and con artist and above average intelligence. And, of course, he uses his gadgets to give him the ability to perform amazing tricks. Like walking on air. And a lot of other things. He's got, like, snot acid guns, all kinds of tricksters. Little tricks up his sleeve. And then last, we have Captain Boomerang, who has been on these battles before. Mr. George Digger Hackness, Struth, Shayla's, all the Australian stuff. Obviously a master of boomerangs, expert marksman, expert combatant, and uses a variety of trick boomerangs. So with that all said, let the smackdown begin.
This is going to be really nasty, I have a feeling.
It's going to be very nasty, yeah. So first off, the scene of this battle is a huge abandoned warehouse under construction. So there's construction girders, there's dust, it's just there's stuff all over the place, but pretty much open. So with this battle, I kind of did the one verse one and kind of go from there, and then they kind of trickle down.
Okay.
So first off, we have Mysterio versus the Mirror Master.
Okay, I like this.
So right off the bat, Mirror Master says, wow, look at that shiny chrome dome with a reflection on it. I could jump right into that or send that dude straight into the mirror world. Points his mirror guns at Mysterio, zaps him. Nothing happens. Why? It's an illusion of Mysterio.
Oh.
Mysterio, right behind him, takes one of those big, thick gauntlets, knocks Mirror Master in the back of the head, knocks him out. He's not out of this. He is still in this, but he is knocked out. Mysterio obviously remains as well.
Wait, quick question. Why are they beefing?
Why are they beefing?
Yeah.
Sinister Six, Flash Rogues, I think they're pretty much like, we're the best group of rogues that a hero could have. And they're like, no, we're actually the best group. And they're like, oh, yeah? Meet us at the warehouse downtown at 6 o'clock, dickheads.
That works.
That was it.
I like that.
Yeah, simple, to the point. It's just a matter of pride. Villain pride. Next up, we have Sandman. Starts just bulking up. He's starting to become like a big sand giant. Captain Cole, being the leader and top tactician right away, is like, that guy's going to be trouble. Immediately just freezes him. Just covers him in ice, makes him a giant sand statue. Sandman is not out, by the way.
Okay.
He is frozen. Captain Cold is still there, too. Now it's going to get a little dark and gritty.
Okay.
Electro starts just shooting electric blasts, flying up, shooting and blasting at the Weather Wizard. Weather Wizard is returning electric blasts and just as much as equal power right back at him. Electro's like, I'm going to take this guy. Zapping. Weather Wizard's like, well, I do have control over the weather, so I can kind of vary my attacks, not just on lightning. So let's make a couple giant girders start flying at him from each side. Two girders come from the left, from the right. Electro sees these, reaches out his hands, blasts them. What he doesn't see is that he also has two other girders coming up from the front and the back, crushing him, impaling him, sending Electro down into a bloody heap on the ground. Electro
is dead.
Is dead.
Oh, no.
Dr. Octopus.
And you just crossed him off the list.
Oh, I just crossed him off. He's dead. Notice nobody else is crossed off.
Right.
Electro's crossed off. Mm-hmm. That guy's dead.
First fatality.
Yeah, first fatality. Dr. Octopus, Captain Boomerang. Dr. Octopus going for the attack. Captain Boomerang throws two boomerangs at his way. They go past him. Dr. Octopus is not an idiot. He's a genius. He knows what boomerangs do. He reaches his, two of his tentacles immediately go back to
catch him.
Crush the boomerangs. One of the boomerangs releases another mini boomerang with, ooh, an explosion.
Oh.
That hits Doc Ock in the leg, blows off one of his legs.
Oh, no.
One of his real human legs.
Oh, shit. No.
Doc Ock goes down screaming. He's also a doctor. He knows that right away he's going to bleed out if he doesn't do anything.
Kind of cauterize the wound.
Takes one of his tentacles and immediately cauterizes the wound with a laser beam. In a blind rage and fury, sends another tentacle right through the chest of Digger Harkness, reaches him up in the sky, lets him just kind of drop down on it a little bit, sends another one through his chest, brings him up again, dips it, and lets him just kind of scurry off. Captain Boomerang is off the table. Dr. Octopus, though, is gravely wounded because he still lost a fucking lot of blood, and he's in shock.
Jeez.
Right. Then we have Kraven the Hunter versus the Trickster. This is going to go rather fast. The Trickster is like, you like to hunt? Throws like a couple exploding chickens at him. not too hard for Kraven to dodge. The bombs create a smoke. Kraven can hunt in all... Kraven is like the premier hunter of the Marvel Universe. He goes through the smoke, goes behind the Trickster, shoots out two Trank darts from his lion mane vest. They hit the Trickster. He goes down. As he's kind of fading in and out, he feels two arms wrap around his neck and crack his neck and break it as he goes dead to the ground.
Goodbye, Trickster.
The Trickster is out. Now, Vulture Heatwave. This is an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
Vulture's obviously taken to the air. Heatwave sees this old bald dude flying around. It's like, well, this guy's toast. Heatwave, unlike Captain Cold, isn't the tactician of the group. He's kind of not that bright.
He's hot-headed.
Yeah. He's got a steaming temper. So he just starts shooting his heat gun, obviously, trying to down the Vulture here. While he's doing that, though, he's not hitting him because the Vulture can maneuver pretty well. He's been flying in those wings for a while. So he's kind of just burning up the building, at least on their end. He's burning up the building. Finally, Vulture comes, swoops down, clocks him in the face. Now, a lot of people don't know the Vulture is really strong when he's in that suit. So knocks him down, hits his gun out of his hand, grabs him up, flies him up, and he's like, all right, motherfucker. He's like, you thought I was just an old dude? Now I'm going to drop you like 20 feet to your death. What he doesn't see is that a piece of the roof from the fire falls down, burns one of his wings. They both now go to the ground, crash, hit the ground. Heatwave is just a crippled piece of like mess. He's still maybe like barely breathing. The Vulture is down and hurt, but his suit kind of protects him. And before he could say anything else,
The roof falls down on him, smacks him in the head, crushes his skull.
He's done.
Heatwave and the Vulture.
They cancel each other out.
Are dead.
Nice.
Yeah. So now we have Mysterio for the Sinister Six, Sandman, frozen, Dr. Octopus, very gravely injured, Kraven the Hunter. And for the Flash Rogues, we have Mirror Master knocked out, Captain Cold, fresh and clean, so fresh and so clean, Weather Wizard, so fresh and so clean. So now we go to Mirror Master starting to come to. He got knocked out, but that's it. You know, he's coming to. He sees Mysterio. Dr. Octopus is like, Mysterio, we have to start planning some stuff here. We got to start getting some, like, all our ducks in a row here. I'm sorry, give me a second real quick. I'm just going to remember how I did this one. Oh, that's right. Okay. Okay, so now we, Doc Ock is like, we got to get our shit together. We got to start planning some things here. As he's like dying. Mysterio's like, no worries, no worries. We're fine, we're fine.
I'm not fine.
Yeah, exactly. okay, so now Mysterio and Dr. Octopus are like, what do we do? What do we got to do? We got to plan something. Mirror Master's coming too. He looks up, he sees Mysterio, and he's like, all right, that is the Mysterio, that piece of shit. Zaps himself away, disappears, goes into the mirror world. As Dr. Octopus is talking to Mysterio, whoosh, out of his helmet pops Mirror Master, zaps Dr. Octopus into the mirror world, takes him there, leaves him there. He's done. He's out. Okay. Left there forever. Mysterio is like, what the fuck just happened? He was in my head. He's in my head. He takes out his dome, throws it to the ground. It breaks into like 10-15 pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Out of those pieces pop 15 Mirror Masters.
Oh no.
They zap Mysterio into the mirror world. He's dead. As this is happening, the flames are melting Sandman and his pieces are slowly nice. Coming out. So now we have Weather Wizard is zapping stuff. He's creating storms. He's going crazy. He's just zapping shit. He's zapping shit. Total chaos. Once again, Kraven the Hunter is not one to be fucked with. He's hunted. He can hunt in all terrains. This is not his first rodeo. He can hunt in a storm. He can hunt in the darkness, the light, whatever. So as Weather Wizard is causing a storm, there's smog, there's fog everywhere, there's clouds. Next thing he knows, he goes to look and tries to bring up his weather wand.
Mm-hmm.
His arm is sliced off at the forearm. By a big Bowie knife from Kraven.
Yeah.
He turns around to look at Kraven. Kraven guts him. Weather Wizard
is gone.
Is gone.
He's just badly injured.
No. He is a slump on the ground. His entrails
so he's dead.
Are coming out.
All right.
Kraven. Kraven now looks at the shininess of his knife. Out of the shininess of his knife.
Oh, no. Mirror Master.
Mirror Master comes out. He's about to zap him. As this happens, a crushing, giant sand anvil comes straight down on Mirror Master, breaks his arms, takes out his guns, and just crushes him. Pounds, pounds, pounds. Sandman kills Mirror Master. Done.
Well, that's a clever way to do it.
Like Kraven that. Is like, thank you so much for saving me, comrade. And I just want to... And all of a sudden, his face starts glowing. It gets really shiny and bright. His whole head is ice. Captain Cold's fist cracks it.
Mm-hmm.
Kraven is dead.
No!
Sandman's like, I know exactly what's going on now. That's the guy that's at me. Smacks his gun out of his hand, envelops him in a giant fist, holds him up, and starts crushing him. He's looking into Leonard Snart's eyes, and Leonard Snart says, kill me. I've got nothing to fucking live for. Just kill me. Sandman looks right into his face and is like, I've seen that before. I know this guy. That's me. He knows what an abused kid looks like. Leonard Snart was horribly abused by his father.
Mm-hmm.
Sandman's dad abandoned him.
He got Jonah hexed.
He goes, hey, what's your favorite beer? And he says, Molson Ice. And he goes, that's some funny ass shit. You want to get a beer? He says, all right, that sounds good. Drops him down. Two guys leave, cut their losses, go get a beer. technically, I would say the Sinister Six won this, but there's no way I'm having my two favorite villains kill each other.
Sandman and Captain Cold.
Oh!
Draw by beer.
Good thing it wasn't Captain Boomerang, or else they would have been going for a Foster's.
Yeah,
that's true.
It's Australian, but yeah.
Which is what you guys are drinking as we speak.
How dare you? We don't drink while we do this.
So, yeah, I have it. I guess if you want to get technical, this is Sinister Six 1.
Dr. Octopus is technically still alive, but he's trapped in that
mirror. And Mysterio.
And Mysterio, they're trapped in that mirror.
Yeah, but that could go on forever. I mean, forever, those people could just be lost there forever.
Well, now that
Mirror Master's dead.
Yeah, they're stuck.
They're kind of stuck unless somebody else finds the mirror gun and tries something. And then
could Constantine get him out?
Constantine can get anybody out.
We'll revisit this in a couple years.
Let me just punch in real quick here. When you were describing some things, I have to, unfortunately, think that Sandman has to die. And the only reason why is because what happens when a heat wave hits sand? It turns to...
Oh, diamond, right? Or it crystallizes?
Turns to glass.
Glass.
And what is glass if not reflective?
Brittle. Oh, shit! Yeah.
And then, at that point, you better pray Mirror Master's not, it's not still alive at that point.
You know what? I didn't go that route because maybe it was just the little kid in me. Mm-hmm. Remember that Return of the Sinister Six story in Spider-Man, the Amazing Spider-Man?
Mm-hmm.
I saw the cover. I was a huge Sandman fan. Still am. Love Sandman. But, like, was like, at that point, like, was in love with anything Sandman I got.
So you love Thomas Hayden Church?
No. Oh. No, I don't.
Oh.
No.
Oh.
But, I'll just forget about that movie.
Okay, Thomas Hayden Church is a great actor, but I don't know what the fuck they were thinking with this. It was god awful.
No, it was just a bad movie. I didn't mind him, and he looked the part.
No, but, it was poorly acted.
Yeah, it was just, a bad movie probably script, everything was
just like even Morgan Freeman did a bad movie. Dreamcatchers.
Yeah. Right.
That
was
a bad movie.
And Hard Rain.
There's nothing you could do. It was a bad script.
No, I went back and watched that and I was just like, it was just boring. It was like an episode one Star Wars movie to me. It was just like...
Minus the good Darth Maul stuff.
Yes. Exactly, right. But yeah, the Venom, all the shit, it was too much. They tried to do too much with it. But the reason I probably didn't go that route with the sand glass thing is because... Remember, Sandman was kind of like on the ropes for a while. He was like, he had that beer with the thing, and like he was like, you know what? Maybe being a villain isn't all it's cracked up to be. And he kind of like was like an anti-hero in a way.
Yeah.
And he joined the Doc Ock forms this new Sinister Six. And I think the only difference was like Hobgoblin was on the team or something like that. And in the first, I was like, cool, like Sandman story for six. You know, it was like a part one of six. I was like, awesome. In the first fucking part of the story, Sandman's like, I don't think I'm going to join you criminals and blah, blah, blah. And Doc Ock or someone was like, pew, and turn him into like a glass sculpture.
Wow.
Shit.
So he was just taken out of the picture in like the first fucking like.
In a very weak, shitty,
just, I was like, why even bring him in then? Like, yeah, what the fuck?
If anything, it's to humiliate him.
Yeah. So.
It should go I can see that. Well, I mean, I could have saw it like either way with like Heat Wave turning Sandman to glass or Weather Wizard using lightning to turn him to glass or just. Right. Like his fist into glass and him breaking that apart and breaking off because that wouldn't kill him.
Right.
You know, and then all that glass being there and then, you know, Mirror Master could work with that. There's a lot of...
If he's still alive, yes.
At that point. There's a lot of different ways you could work around that also depending on who goes up against who.
The Trickster, unfortunately. Exactly, yeah. I feel sorry for the Trickster. He had no business even being in this fight.
Yeah, well, it was going to be either between him or the Pied Piper. So either one of those guys probably wouldn't have lasted that long. Yeah.
Well, but, I mean, Kraven, he... Hunts Craven, with his ears just as well as he does with his eyes.
That's true. But Kraven actually surprised me in this. I'm a fan of Kraven, but I'm not like, I love Kraven's Last Hunt.
Yeah.
But I wasn't like a huge Kraven fan, but in doing this, I was like, oh, a hunter in these circumstances would be almost like enjoying it. Like,
yes. Yeah. You know, yeah, especially since Kraven, he's one of those guys that you know wants to die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's like, you know, obviously. So him being in there, this is like his last hurrah. He's fucking loving it. Yeah, right. He's getting off on this shit.
That was my first introduction to suicide was Kraven's Last Hunt, because I remember just picking up that book and my parents didn't like check what I was reading, especially if it's like a Spider-Man book. And I remember reading that and going like, this is kind of a dark story, like, you know, for a kid. I was like, this is kind of dark. And at the end I was like,
did he just blow his brains out in a coffin with his family's picture? Jeez. I was like, oh my God. And then you look back and now it's like a masterpiece. It's just like, oh man, like he got what he wanted. He beat Spider-Man.
Yeah.
He beat him at his own game. He beat him as, I mean, like he became him. He ruined him. He literally beat him, buried him alive. He's like, what else do I have? That's like the ultimate hunt.
It's kind of like the Wile E. Coyote if he finally gets to kill the Roadrunner.
Right.
Right.
There's
like,
no, he'd be off himself that night.
Exactly.
Right. This was good. I'd also give it to the Sinister Six. Just, and I mean, the Flash Rogues, are they're always quite clever.
Right.
But you have a guy that has a cold gun. You have a guy that has a heat gun.
They're gimmicky.
They're, yeah, they're weapons. They're tricks. You know, they're things. You knock those out of their hand.
Chess versus checkers.
Right. They don't have anything. Dr. Octopus, you can't knock those tentacles out of his hand.
Right.
You know, Electro, you can't knock the electric out of his hand.
Right.
None of these guys, you can knock the things out of their hands that they have in a Sinister Six unless Kraven had a knife. And in which case, trying to knock a knife out of Kraven's hands?
Good luck.
Yeah, good luck.
But he all, and he also has super strength. A lot of these guys also just had like super strength. Like Vulture, super strength.
Yeah,
Kraven,
this is
super strength.
This is just a classic overpower. Sinister Six is way overpowered compared to the Flash Rogues. They held their own, and in fact, the fact that you made it a tie and they went and got a beer, I'm happy with that, because I didn't want to see the entire Flash Rogues get slaughtered.
They're annihilated.
I would have been happier, like I said, if it was Captain Boomerang alive instead of Captain Cold.
Right.
But either way, I'm happy somebody survived and got to have a beer at the end.
Well, the reason the Flash Rogues even got so far is because I think, especially the way Geoff Johns wrote them, mm-hmm. he made them way more vicious, like, mm-hmm. you know, more cunning.
Well,
like,
I think also that they work better as a team.
Exactly, right.
Because they're almost a family unit.
Oh, they're like all the black sheeps of their families in one family. Like,
right.
They're the misfits.
Yeah.
They found each other.
Yeah, exactly. Sinister Six, not so much. They're fighting amongst themselves. They're on their own most of the time, you know, so it's a little different. It's not as cohesive. So I can see how the Flash Rogues would have lasted as long as they did,
mm-hmm.
but they're just not going to overlast or outlast that large, powered of a team.
Yeah, for me, the fun in this was finding the Mirror Master stuff. Obviously, was so cool because all the reflective stuff and Kraven. Kraven and Mirror Master were the two that surprised me in this one. I was like, oh, wait. He could do that. He could do that. That would be cool. He could do that. You know. And it was actually apropos that Mirror Master and Kraven kind of were at the end with each other too. Even though,
hypothetical question: could Mirror Master work around the Emkron crystal in some ways? Is this like reflective? And
I think it might drive him crazy.
Might drive him crazy.
Yeah.
Just thinking about.
But although the mirror world is probably insane too, like it's just portals and. I remember him in one of the early Super Friends episodes. They made, there was like a Mirror Masters, Mirror Master was the villain for one episode. And I was like, from that point on, I thought he was super cool. Because it was just like, yeah, you would take them and just bring them in the mirror world and be like, peace out, see you later. And they're like, how do we get out of here?
Yeah.
It's kind of like getting caught in the Ultimate Funhouse.
Kind of, yeah. Like getting stuck in the Phantom Zone, too. All
right.
There's all that kind of stuff. But I think that's going to wrap us up, guys. Thank you for listening. Please, please, please subscribe to us on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. We have a nice, nifty little Facebook page now. Mm-hmm. I think we do, like, SmackDown Sundays.
So if you guys,
you know, we're going to be posting a battle, and you can tell us who you think would win.
Weigh in on it. Ones that we haven't done.
Right.
Things like that.
Ones that we haven't done. And also, if you have some ideas, we'll either do it on a SmackDown Sunday.
Yeah, please.
Or in one of these regular podcast SmackDowns. So please let us know what you think.
Yeah, give us your SmackDowns. Obviously, iTunes, rate, review, but more importantly, subscribe.
Subscribe to the most righteous of all podcasts on the internet.
Tell your friends, and more importantly, we'll see you at the comic shop.
This has been The Real Short Box. We'll see you at the comic shop. Thanks for listening.